91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we consider the constant objective of most every company, or what it should be, exceptional customer service. Yet most everyone is often annoyed and disenchanted, either by phone or in person, or even by email. Good afternoon, it's Joseph Cooper. We'll hear two experts from Dale Carnegie Training of Southeast Florida tell us how they teach both the basics and the subtleties of streamlined customer service. And here's one for the eternally frustrated or the irate. These experts teach customer service follow-through as well. Topical Currents is up next. Customer service, our topic. First, NPR News. Joseph Cooper with today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman, once again, is a little bit under the weather, but she's going to be back Thursday, she promises. Of course, Wednesday at 1 o'clock tomorrow, we have live coverage of the school board meeting, so Bonnie will be back Thursday. Well, here are some things to dislike about customer service, at least by telephone. First, the operator who's mastered the old brush-off-to-hold routine. It goes like this. ABC Medical, please hold. Ah, instant irritation. And is it worth mentioning the round and round? All agents are busy with other customers' interludes with cool jazz. Our focus is on customer relations this hour, and we have two experts at hand. First, the owner and CEO of Dale Carnegie Training for Southeast Florida. He's Scott Garvis, and he's a South Florida native and a member of the Dale Carnegie Franchise Association Board of Directors. Welcome to you, Scott.
Thank you.
Should be an interesting hour. Also with us, the vice president of Dale Carnegie Training, Southeast Florida, Christine Pallinson. She's a presenter and gives one-on-one coaching to associations and clients. Welcome to you, Christine.
Thank you.
Are there ideal company policies for customer service, depending on the type of service that's given? Or what are some of the typical policies that they enforce?
Well, first, the policy is that whatever we do has to be aligned with the company's goals and vision. And that starts with the leader. And whatever the leader sets is what kind of company that they want and the type of treatment that they want for their customers. Everything that we do in customer service has to be in line with that.
And it starts at the top, because if we don't have an internal culture of service between our team members, then ultimately we can have all the top 10 best policies you could ever imagine for what the rules should be for treating our customer. But if the internal experience isn't one that your manager cares about you and knows about you as a person, then what our research has found is that those policies, they won't even matter. So it starts there.
So it really starts at the CEO level?
Absolutely. And actually, the research shows...
But can't a scowling CEO still have somebody in charge of customer service who really knows their stuff and is friendly and exuberant?
Absolutely.
And that person is also part of a leadership team. And so we say the top, we mean the top of that space in the business. But what we found is that if the executive team is not harmonious and not on the same page, then it's not going to work long term. So if the CEO is not a friendly, customer-driven person, then the vice president of customer service won't last very long.
That's right.
What are some of the sort of companies that you work for and organizations? And even you do one-on-one counseling too. How does that work?
Yeah, so the bulk of our business is done in groups, because we find that people learn more around other people. So when we're talking about customer service, we get the groups together. It starts, though, with a discussion with the executive about what are some of the challenges that they're having, what are some of the markers they're looking to move up. For example, maybe they're measured in customer service, so they'd like to increase their customer service rating, or sometimes they measure their customer service by repeat business. So they want to first establish what they want, and then we build the program to align with some of the goals.
Now, Christine, what's it like to introduce yourself to one of these groups, that these people have kind of been lassoed into this And they're going to, it's the customer service meeting.
Well, you say it perfectly. It's kind of like, I'll compare it to sales training. It's the same type of vibe.
Mission statement time.
Exactly. Like, here we go. Okay. You know, usually the first reaction that people have when they're like a frontline service person is my manager going to be in this training as well? Because they need to be in this training. And so we up front have to really engage the participants that we're training. But like Scott, you've been saying, if we don't get that direct supervisor involved, we know it will fall flat because we're only in the building maybe a couple times a month for a few years in a row, whatever it is, but they're there every single day. So the quickest way to get a more positive reaction is if we're training the direct boss. If that person's more genuinely interested in their people, you get better service.
I think about some of the times now, regrettably, I've given customer service people a hard time, and I think about what sort of burnout and what sort of abuse that they really have to endure, say, during an 8-hour shift. It must be very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, they obviously work long hours, and most of their job is around negativity. You know, most people aren't calling and saying, hey, Joe, great job. Thank you so much.
I'm glad I got HBO tonight.
That's right. They're calling because they have a problem. And as you think about our goal as a customer service representative, we all are, is that's not take care of the problem right away. Let's take care of the person. So the emotional intelligence of a customer service person is more important than even just trying to solve the problem.
Yes.
So how do you separate out those who are really kind of naturals at this and those who probably shouldn't be doing any kind of customer service business?
Well, you know, a good company process is a pre-hiring screening, like a pre-hiring tool to, and with pre-hiring assessments, you can measure somebody's social ability and patience. So if you look at somebody who you've interviewed for a job and then they look good, but then you profile them and their social ability is on the low end, or their patience is on the low end, that person might need training to get up to speed and not be a natural.
I was thinking about people that I've heard, you know, complaining about customer service, and so frequently you hear that people are really being beat up on, and there's some bigotry involved that they face, is that I called tech service and somebody in Pakistan answered the phone. I bet those people take a lot of abuse. It must be very difficult for somebody like that in those kind of conditions.
Well, think about it. When we're calling, most people aren't excited to make that phone call, and they're already perceiving some of those negative stereotypes that people have placed on customer service when ultimately those stereotypes aren't the norm. A lot of companies are really investing in having a great interface with their customers. And so if we as customers go into a customer service situation more open, less critical, condemning or complaining, like Dale Carnegie would say, we're going to have a much better experience when we're interacting with those agents.
On the telephone side, I know some companies now will put on their website that your tech support will be in the United States, obviously trying to show that you're not going to get somebody that you're going to have to battle with understanding them.
Sure.
And then feeling that resulting anger.
Yes, sure. I think American Express is a good example of that. Depending on what card you invest in, whether it's a platinum card or the gold card, you're guaranteed an American representative on the phone.
What about businesses that aren't small enough to really have any consultation? They're trying to do it in-house, and they might not be experts at it. How do they go about it? And is that something that, say, Dale Carnegie training would go after?
You know, it's really interesting. I was just spent some time in Wynwood on my way to the show, and that's a place right here in Miami where there are a lot of creatives. And there were two gentlemen sitting to my left in the coffee shop talking about customer service. They were actually talking about this, and I'm like eavesdropping because I'm about to go do this show. But they're a startup here in Miami, and there's other startups all over the world. The millennials are big on this. What we're seeing is a lot of those startups are doing email-based follow-up for customer service, so they don't even have a phone number you can call, which could be really frustrating when you're trying to get help. But what I've seen is that they're replying back to those emails or texting or doing live chat, and it's actually creating an even more immediate, more controlled environment for servicing the customer. So that's one trend that we're seeing, is us being more flexible, you could call it agile, with the type of technology that we're using to provide customer service.
And I would also add that if you're really a small company, let's say 5 or 6 employees, the one thing you do have in control is your internal customer service.
Yes.
So treat your people well, and they'll treat the customer well.
That's right.
You just mentioned live chat. I always suspect that there's not a human being behind that. Am I correct in that?
My experience has been that they're live. And if they're not live, they're incredibly creepy convincing that they're real. That artificial intelligence must be really good. Just yesterday, I was emailing with an online retailer, and there's no way that wasn't a human, because I, in my typical way, wrote back, "Thank you so much for helping me." And he wrote back immediately, "Thank you for thanking me for helping you."
So your reply was enthusiastic, of course.
Well, Dale Carnegie said that enthusiasm is the little known secret of success. So why not leverage that, whether you're on the customer service side or, in my case yesterday, a customer looking for really good customer support? And that helps.
I was looking on the Dale Carnegie website, and some of his philosophies, and very high up on his list is that everyone loves the sound of their own name.
Yes.
And using that, it opens up people so much. Mm-hmm. It's easy to forget that sometimes.
You know, the other day I was at a coffee shop, and when the gentleman handed me my coffee, he said, "Have a great day, Christine." And I smiled, and I thought, "Oh, that's my name." We know how he knew my name, right? I paid with a credit card. And he looked at my credit card. It's like the oldest trick in the book. I teach Dale Carnegie, and I'm falling for the oldest tricks in the book. But you just never get tired of hearing somebody's name. It's a completely simple way to provide great service.
What about looking at customer service in the 21st century? Is it any different than the 20th century? Or does it just seem to be that people are less civil? They're used to talking in emails and Twitters and with a lot of brevity and directness.
Yeah, I think that every year, people's expectations go up, especially if they're being treated well. You know, if you think about a place like the Breakers Hotel, where you go there and it's just 5-star service. And then when you go the next time, you expect what? 5-star service or more. So I think every year that goes by, our expectations actually go up. And especially if you think about some of the brands, like some of the auto dealerships.
Maybe in areas like the Breakers, but let's get down more to the fast food area or something like that. I'm not so sure that things are more civil today.
Well, the fast food. So if you get your food fast today.
Maybe that's not a good example either.
No, it is a good example, because if you look at McDonald's today, every one of their stores are being remodeled. Because they're trying to...
And will be robotic.
Robotic, yes. And why are they robotic? Well, number one, it saves the company money, because we become more self-sufficient at ordering, but it cuts down the time that we're going to get our food. And if you think about, so if fast food is fast now, what's the expectation next year for fast food? It's going to be quicker. Mm-hmm. So we, as humans, we always want more, better, for less.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about customer service on today's Topical Currents. Let me get our telephone numbers, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, please keep them short. Oops, please keep them short. radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org. Perhaps you have some thoughts on today's customer service landscape, maybe strategies for best results that you use. Using customer service as negotiation, perhaps. Now, we know everybody has horror stories and incidents they don't want to talk about, but they want to talk about, but unless yours is really unique, probably we all heard it. Anyway, we're going to take a short break on the program, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, minus Bonnie Berman, should be back on Thursday. We're visiting with the owner and CEO of Dale Carnegie Training for Southeast Florida. He's Scott Garvis. Also, Christine Pallinson, she's the vice president of Dale Carnegie Training, Southeast Florida. And we're talking about customer service. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. What companies really lead the way, say national companies, in their customer service training? You mentioned like the Breakers at Palm Beach. You expect that there, but of the other companies, more general.
Well, one that's been in the news recently is Whole Foods, I mean, it's impossible to go to a Whole Foods market, and when you need something, they're not just going to point you in a direction. They're going to walk you over there. They're going to actually share with you about the product, ask you some questions. So we've had some incredible experiences with Whole Foods. And then the other thing that I would say is less about a brand name, but more of a philosophy, because, you know, we as consumers have perceptions of brands. And I know I had my perceptions of one of the fast casual restaurants we work with. But what I found is that when a lot of times there's a lot of legacy of tenure of employees where they've worked there a long time, you can get some really great heart and soul from those employees and start to really feel it. So those restaurants that we go to where people have worked there a long time or been part of that organization, you really tend to feel that and get great service.
Can tenure be a handicap?
Of course. Hey, any good thing, any positive trait could also be our biggest Achilles heel
in
any situation.
I've been here forever, and we're going to do it my way, and this is what we do.
Absolutely. It could go one way. It could go the other.
Yeah, and another brand is Ritz-Carlton. You know, they've got a famous creed that they use, that every employee has to read a card before they go to work every day. And they really stand out as a brand with customer service. But back to your point about tenured employees and why that might hold up customer service is it depends on what have they done to develop those people over time. You know, they could be old and stale or old and fresh. So
can you turn them around?
Yes. And it's a two-part approach, because number one, the leader of the company has to sell this internally. This is what we're doing and why we're doing it and why it's important. And then the company that will teach you how to do this is the Dale Carnegie training. So it's two. It's elite internal and then external support or partnering by a company like Dale Carnegie.
Do you go back and see how they're doing? And also do you, what's the right word, like shop the call in anonymously and just see how things are happening, or attend the restaurant anonymously? And
Scott's father, Larry Garvis, who I know is listening to the show, he and Marlene founded Dale Carnegie for Southeast Florida almost 50 years ago, and he is like the ultimate secret shopper. He, on our team, I think, is the absolute best at going out there, experiencing it, and then really thinking about, you know, what ways could we make this more of a wow in terms of customer service. And one change, we were talking about changes before the break, is that now customer service isn't just what happens when we have an interaction live. It's also becoming more complete. You could almost call it more intimate, because the service is also going to what happens before you come to a property or walk in a restaurant, to what happens after as well. So through technology, we're getting this really complete type of service that we need to shop.
And of course, your customer service will extend to your website and how easy it is to flow through it and
That's
find
right.
what you need. It takes a lot of thought.
Yeah. And, you know, another example of, you know, there's a company in Pompano Beach, a garage door company that I called recently. We did some work with them a few years ago, and they still use the principle of when they call, they ask your name and then they use your name. We taught that. So we do follow up with people to make sure that it's being done.
Yes.
You know, back to your point about, can you change people? And we get that question probably almost every day is, we're going to do training. How do you change somebody? Well, we find that there's four ways to change a human being or get them to adapt. Number one, they have to have the right attitude. What does that mean? The attitude is they want this, they know it's important, and they're willing to try it. That's the first part. The second part is give them the techniques of customer service, then the how-to. So they have the want, now they have the how-to. The third quadrant that's critical is practice with strong coaching. So they get a chance to come somewhere, learn it, practice it, and then go out and apply it and follow up. So that's the way to really change a human being or get them to adapt to this. A lot of those steps are left out with a typical learning and development program.
Yeah, it's a rah-rah event, right? Like they get really amped up and motivated. They feel so positive, and then it falls flat. And then we wonder why training doesn't work. But if those other two steps are followed, you can really get more of a lasting result.
I would imagine, though, that you have to really fight people sliding back. They get all pumped up when you're there and you coach them, and then it just kind of slides. But in fact, Marie John here has an email. She says, how do you create consistency with the team?
Yeah. Well, it's about accountability. So the consistency comes from, you know, the associate wants to know, what do you expect of me? And then how we're held accountable long term. So in your weekly meetings, we have to keep talking about the customer service, have touch-up training ongoing, but then praise people when they do well on the phones, but then also have a good coaching conversation when they don't. And that's how, Marie, we establish that consistency.
I would say one other thing. One of Dale Carnegie's principles from How to Win Friends and Influence People, that's kind of a confusing one, is to arouse in the other person an eager want. So what that really means is how can I make somebody want to do something? So with customer service, gosh, I can't think of a better example of why we would need to do that. So the way to get it to be consistent in addition to accountability is get your people to want to deliver great customer service, because if they want it, they're going to do it. If they don't want to, you could hold them accountable every day and it'll fall flat. They've got to want it.
Everybody loves the feeling of, I did a great job on that. That's how it's supposed to go. I wish they all were like that. But when you're swamped and it's difficult to keep that attitude.
Absolutely. You know, attitude's not taught in school. When we teach sales training, we spend a lot of time on attitude. When we teach leadership training, we're spending more and more time on attitude, because there are absolutely tips and techniques that we can use to strengthen our own attitude. The only person we can control is ourselves. So we've got to take total ownership of that way we're being perceived in our attitude.
And one of the things that impedes attitude or holds people back is lack of time management. And a lot of folks, for example, we have a client that I remember one time told me, we expect 100 calls a day, and they also want the person to log the calls into the computer and follow up. Well, it's almost impossible. So realistic expectations and then helping the person be able to control their day with time management is important.
How about writing and approving scripts? To get a good one, it must take an awful lot of effort to make the person not appear to be reading a script, but actually following some very strict lines. How do you do that?
Well, we're not huge believers in scripts. We're more believers in the process. So, for example, if you want to help an irate customer calm down, read them a script and you'll make them more upset, right?
So there's
steps. Like, you know, for example, we have to listen to the person's problem and show empathy. Right, not just script it.
So more steps, not scripts, correct, is what I'm hearing you say. Yeah,
more,
it's for
more
sure.
It's more of a process than it is the words that we use. And so,
let's take a call or two. 1-800-743-9576 on number 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email radio@wlrn.org. radio@wlrn.org. Next up, we have Paula. In
Hello.
Dania.
Hi, I love your show every day.
This call may be recorded, by the way.
Okay, my question is, when you have a problem with customer service after multiple calls, and you even know the solution, but you get no result, even if you tell them the solution, you know, delivering something to the wrong address, is it worth it to write to corporate headquarters, and who would you direct it to?
I would say thank you so much for writing that in, because I think a lot of us have been in that situation where we wonder, what's the next step when I'm not getting what I need or what I want? And, you know, there's really never any harm in going up the chain of command. If you're not getting the service that you need, instead of getting angry about it, why not in a friendly way move up the ladder and ask for someone? I know an old school thing people used to do with cable companies is ask to put the direct supervisor on the phone. So I would say, yes, absolutely. Expedite it up through, but do it in a friendly way, and you're more likely to get what you want.
I did. And I told them they're delivering it to the wrong address. I did that 3 times in one day, and they still sent it 3 blocks away to a person who has been signing for our things, and we never get notified. They just disappear. So it actually involved a little police action for me to get someone's package. So I was wondering if it's worth it to write to corporate headquarters, who would I direct it to? Is a letter more effective or an email?
There's probably a customer relations executive there or an operations manager, something like that.
Okay.
That would usually get the attention.
All right. Well, thanks.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Mm-hmm. Let's take a short break on our program. We're talking about customer service. We'll be back with more. Mm-hmm. And we're back with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper minus Bonnie Berman today. She'll be back on Thursday. And we resume our conversation with Scott Garvis and Christine Pellinson. They're from the Dale Carnegie Training for Southeast Florida. And we're talking about what else? Customer service. What are some of the ways that you can have the best chance of influencing that person that you call for customer service, or that you're in front of for customer service, to make sure that they're going to be in your corner and to not be a little too brusque, but to really get them to work for you best? What influences the influencer?
Yeah, well, the first thing is the relationship. So as Christine said, we have to stay calm and stay friendly, even though we might be unhappy with a situation. So we want to build a relationship, maybe even show interest in the person. How's your day going, et cetera. But then also, Dale Carnegie taught us to talk in terms of the other person's interests. So if I'm trying to influence somebody, I better say something that talks about what's in it for them if they're able to solve our problem. So it could be saving them time, saving their job. Keeping me as a customer is a big motivator for customer service.
Who leads the way when you train in customer service?
So the way we're structured at Dale Carnegie is we've got, Christy and I are leaders of the organization, and then we have a handful of consultants / people that go out and meet with a customer to diagnose the problem, build the solution. And then we also have what we call Dale Carnegie Certified Trainers. And these folks will actually lead the engagement with the participants to teach them customer service and leaders. And one thing about Dale Carnegie, our facilitators only work for Dale Carnegie, and it takes a minimum of 2 years to become a trainer. So we put them through a pretty rigorous process to learn the methodology and the content and the delivery style before we put somebody in front of their first customer.
What's the ideal personality for someone to be in customer service and be really good at it?
The first thing that just popped in my head, no filter, is the ability to listen. Because if we're not listening, we're definitely not making other people feel heard, and we cannot understand what needs to happen. So someone who's very much interested in listening first, and then someone who can push their personality through the phone if they're in a phone situation, or even face-to-face, to be able to really put that enthusiasm in play. Because if you can combine the two together, you're going to really have somebody who takes good care of her customer.
Here's an emailer, Abba. It says, enjoy the show talking about customer care. Do you think that rewards help improve employee morale? When I go to Walmart versus Publix, for example, I feel the employees at Publix are probably better paid and better taken care of and are more cheerful and friendly.
So studies have shown that your compensation is not necessarily a reward. You know, rewarding, and if you look at most employee opinion surveys and best places to work, what employees want from their jobs, number one motivator is recognition. So true recognition is recognizing the behavior of a good customer service individual. So if they were able to handle the problem well, or they were observed being friendly, to let them know, hey, that really stands out. We appreciate your behavior with that customer. That we find has long-lasting results for the employee morale and it's important also just to hand them a check or a prize, but those tangible rewards typically have a shorter shelf life than recognition.
And you mentioned something really important, Scott, with recognition, that in the example you gave, you didn't just say, hey, Joseph, great job today, and then walk away, because that's so often what leaders are doing today. They're saying, hey, that was good, or they're being very vague. What you did, Scott, is remind us, like we teach, that we have to use an example. If we want to reinforce behavior, we've got to share as specific as we can of an example of what we liked, and then recognize that so we can get that repeat behavior we want to see.
Give an example. Instead of, oh, good job to a waiter, that was the, oh, what a great job, what a great experience. You do, you make me feel so comfortable here.
So, you know, if I were leading a team of waiters, let's just say, since you brought that one up, Joseph, I observed one of my team members who noticed, took the initiative and noticed that someone, let's keep it simple, their glass of water was empty and it's not their table. And they went over to that table and took total ownership of making sure their glasses were full and whatever else, I would recognize them for not just saying, hey, great job. I would say, hey, you know, I really appreciated that you noticed that there was something that was missing there. And then you took total ownership and went and filled those water glasses up. Thank you for doing that. So something simple like that can go a really long way versus, hey, thanks. Thanks for doing that.
And you're walking on air after that.
That's right.
Yeah, I can give you another example. So to make it real, you know, Polly works for the radio station. And I could tell you, Joseph, Polly's a great associate. Thank you for having her call us. And that sounds okay. But if I said
well,
to you.
That's why she's with us.
That's why she. But if I said to you, if I said to you, Polly was great. And the reason I say that is because she called us a couple of times, took a genuine interest in us to make sure we were finding the place okay. She had a parking spot for us. She made us feel really important. Thank you for having her contact us. So now that I gave you a specific on Polly, and then if she heard that, she probably would want to repeat that behavior because she saw that it was valuable.
That's right.
Yeah, that's very good. That's a very good example.
It makes it genuine, right? Instead of some managers hesitate to appreciate people because they don't want to give them a big head or blow smoke. But when you make it tangible like that, it becomes so genuine.
Let's see. Another emailer, Jonathan. What I find most annoying, automatic systems that go on endlessly or don't have a prompt for none of the above. I guess that you can get to earlier. As I always am eventually successful getting who I want because I do not get confrontational, but I know how to escalate. So the confrontational aspect will really get you nowhere. And I know, not from firsthand experience, that if you're on and really berating someone from the cable company or telephone company, if you start cursing, they can just let you go. Otherwise, they can't.
That's right.
As soon as you break into that, it's over. And then you go back to the head of the line and have to wait on hold for another half hour. And I wonder do they mark people that if you're give people a hard time, I wonder if that's on your record, say, if you call, say, AT&T and really get on them, if they mark that you're beware of this guy.
Yeah, not sure about that, but they probably should.
They
right?
should.
They probably should.
I hope they do the opposite, too, and say, oh, that person was so nice. Yeah. Let's take good care of her.
See, she's Dale Carnegie.
I'm hoping.
The power of positive
Correct.
Thinking
I'm
right
hoping.
There.
Well, you know, if we remind ourselves when we're unhappy, what is the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to get your problem solved. So if you beat somebody up, it's probably not going to get your problem solved.
Sure.
So let's remind ourselves of why we're even making this phone call.
You'll be even more frustrated. Yeah.
Correct.
And feel bad yourself that you did it even.
That's right.
Let's see. Mike in Hollywood, you're up. Mike.
Hi. Yeah. Great show. Thank you very much. I actually found out somewhere that just a pad and a pen is a very powerful tool when you're in person with the person. For instance, I was at Walmart. I knew I was in the right to get a battery exchange for my boat. Ladies give me a hard time. I just wrote down her first name, asked her if I could have her last name, what the address of the store was, and before you know it, I got my new battery.
So that was a little threat.
Kind of intimidation, because she's saying, why are you writing? I said, I don't know yet. I'm just writing, and just kept asking questions. And she just went and got me a new battery. So, okay, we can do this.
Wow. Mike, that's a great tip. A lighter version for those of us who might not be carrying on a notepad is just to even get the person's name right up front. Be like, by the way, what's your name? Just like we'd want them to do with us. But you're right. It also might work because it surprises them because people don't typically care what their name is or ask some of those questions. That's awesome.
Well, she had the first name on her shirt on the tag, so I'm just asking her last name. And so asking a few questions, I just got what I wanted very quickly.
That's great. What a great piece of advice.
It reminds me of maybe something we could try. Maybe just take a picture of the person. We all have phones now. And so just
Be
take
careful.
A picture of the name tag, and that's it.
Well, you could record the audio, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Welcome to the 21st century.
I don't know if that would be invasive if I started filming, but, I mean, the pad and pen, I'm telling you, it's a magic tool.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Okay, great show. Thank you.
Here's someone I want to hear from, a customer service provider perspective. There we go. Maya,
Hi.
Miami Beach.
How are you?
Hello.
How are you? Yes, I am. I'm in customer service. I'm what you would call an independent contractor because I work for several customer service companies. And one of the things I would say is that, first of all, you have to love it. You have to love what you do. I think you have to love what you do no matter what you're doing. And if you're doing customer service, it's a thing that you have to love to do. Second, I would say that people want to be treated, or you want to be treated, anyone wants to be treated the way you would treat somebody else. So if, you know, put yourself in the other person's position. I would say the other thing is patience, of course, attitude, and to be friendly. Be friendly right off the bat, immediately. Greet the person with, "Hi, how may I help you?" I was taught very early on that if you cannot answer a question, or if there's something that you don't know about or have not knowledge about, always say to the customer or client, "I'm sorry, I can't answer that question at this time. I will find someone that can." And that quells the customer or client right away.
So that's follow through.
Yeah, and the other thing is, remember, most of us are in customer service. We don't know it. One way or the other, we are in customer service. By greeting somebody, by smiling to somebody on the street, by saying hello, being the first to say hello, "Hi, how are you?" Saying hello to the bus driver, because I ride the bus. All of these things are extremely helpful. And so getting back to what your the great people on the show were talking about, attitude, I would say, is the first. Having good attitude will get you everywhere and most places. Or most places and everywhere, let's put it that way.
You know, I love how you said, Maya, about the everyone's in customer service. And I was at an auto dealership recently. And usually you're greeted at auto dealership, you have to walk to the desk and say something. Now they have these things called skilled brand ambassadors or brand representatives that actually come out before you even talk to a salesperson, and they greet you and they find out, you know, why you're here. So I think companies are looking today for being even more creative in the touch points that they have, and that we all have to be a brand ambassador for wherever we're working for.
Exactly. And I would love, you know, even though I know what I know, I always think there's always room for improvement. And if I can find or get to your, because I don't drive or whatever anymore, but if I can find or get to your place to take your course, I would be more than happy, because life is about learning and we never stop learning. There's always more to learn. And but I'm so enjoying your show. And I suggest, my last thing I'm going to say is, always come from the perspective, like I said before, put yourself in the other person's shoes. Always do that.
Okay.
Like the saying says, you know, walk a mile in my moccasin. You do not know where that person has come from. You do not know their story, and they don't know yours. So just take it from there.
Okay. We'll take it from there.
Thank you. Thank you, Joseph.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. Let's take our final break on the program. We'll be back. Minutes past 1 o'clock. It's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you, along with Scott Garvis and Christine Pallinson. They're both from the Dale Carnegie Training for Southeast Florida. A little bit more about you, Scott. You're the second-generation owner of Dale Carnegie Training. I assume you got into it because of your parents.
I did. And my father was working for Scott Paper Company and took Dale Carnegie, and it had a huge impact on him. And he was offered a job, and he moved from Atlanta down to Palm Beach area in Fort Lauderdale back in the late 60s. And my parents and my sister, we were involved for many years. This is my 21st year in Dale Carnegie. Time flies.
And Christine, you're a Central Florida graduate.
I am. Go Knights.
And how did you get into the Dale Carnegie end of things?
You know, UCF in Orlando has a really unique leadership training program, at least at the time. Now they're a lot more widespread. And one of the books that we read was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I really loved the topic. But for me, I wanted to be in business. And so Dale Carnegie has been a great career path for me because our team and I get to go into companies from really every industry and sit with their owners and with their people, learn it, and make an impact on how we can really help them achieve their goals. So it's been a lot of fun. But really, the short answer is I cold called the guy to my left here, Scott, about 100 times until he took my call. Yeah. So I think that was my first sale, was getting the interview. So you got to be persistent.
Yeah, selling yourself is very important.
Absolutely.
And if someone would like to get in touch with Dale Carnegie of Southeast Florida, how do they go about that, Scott?
Well, they could. The website is southflorida.dalecarnegie.com, or our phone number is 954-961-2209, and we cover basically Sebastian down to the Keys as our territory.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We've got Bill in North Miami. He's been on the phone a long time. Thanks for your patience, Bill.
No problem. Thank you. Your last caller that was in customer service was right on. I wouldn't mind as a consumer if I'm put on hold because an employee doesn't know the answer to my question or says they'll call me back and ask for my phone number. That's another one thing. The thing that really, really annoys me and gets me very angry is if someone gives me the wrong information or if somebody has neglected to do what they're supposed to do and then makes up a whole lie covering themselves. This happened to me with the second largest bank in the United States. I set up a verbal password, and they're supposed to ask me for that verbal password before proceeding to answer my question or my concerns. She told me that that verbal password was no longer valid because it didn't have enough letters in that verbal password, told me that I had to contact this fictitious department in this bank, and this is on the phone, on the 800 number. And then after I got done talking to her, I called back the 800 number, spoke to someone else. My verbal password was, in fact, valid. There was no special department I had to reset up a new verbal password with. She had just forgotten to ask me for my verbal password in the beginning.
Bill?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mess with you.
nobody likes to be lied to.
Of course. No. You know, talking about something I was reading from Dale Carnegie is that they try and train people to realize the tone of voice and the speed of what someone talks like and to sort of match it. If someone calls and they're kind of Midwestern, maybe, you don't want to be a little slower than, say, Bill, go ahead. Bill's a fast talker, right?
Well, actually, normally I'm not, but the point is that you have a program with a lot of other callers, so I have to speak faster than
Well, they all appreciate that very much, Bill. And
Bob,
so do we.
As a consumer, please, don't lie to me to cover up a mistake. Everyone makes mistakes. It's only human. And if you've made a mistake, say, oh, hey, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. This is blah, blah, blah. And certainly don't give me false facts. And put me on hold or call me back and give me the answer to my question if as a customer service employee, you can't answer my question. That's all.
Well, I'm sorry I put you on so late.
Slower and nicer, that's the way I started out. But just thinking of this story, how this employee lied to me to cover up her mistake and made a whole long story about a fictitious department that I had to set up a new verbal password that doesn't exist.
Okay, we got to run.
Thanks, man. Great show.
Okay, thanks for your call. Diego, Fort Lauderdale, hi.
Hi, I was calling because someone was saying that being nice when treating customer service is a good idea. Well, I used to work in customer service for Walmart, and the people that were the nastiest.
You mean at the counter, at the customer relations counter?
Yeah.
That must be rough around Christmas time.
Oh, no. Thanksgiving, Black Friday. Ooh, oh. But the people that were the nastiest were the ones that will get anything from the managers, because they will say, I want to speak to a manager. And you'll be like, well, the manager won't do anything. And the manager will walk all over you and say, yeah, we'll give you whatever you want. So it will make you look like you were the mean one, the one trying to be mean to the customer. And
oh, he's the bad guy.
Yeah, and you were just trying to do your job because your manager told you, well, you're supposed to do this and this when that happened. And then the manager comes and
so he
does the opposite.
So the manager wilts under the pressure.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I noticed, that the customers that are nasty are get whatever they want. And the ones that are really nice and they're like, oh, okay, I'll take whatever, they don't get anything. So that's my experience as a customer service manager.
Okay. I always wonder, thanks, Diego. I always wonder sometimes if I get the supervisor, I want to talk to the supervisor. They put you on hold, so you had the smooth jazz for quite a while, or maybe a menu of their services, say on cable TV or something. Finally, you get the feeling that it was, Scott, I got somebody here. You want to be manager for this guy here?
Correct.
You're not really talking to the manager, right? You think that's true?
Well, you know, I, first of all, the worst part of it is that whoever is the manager typically is not prepared even for that call themselves, because the typical person in business is promoted to manager with no training, zero. They just get the new title because somebody aged out, or they did well as an individual contributor and now they're a manager. So they're not even prepared themselves.
Now, here's a very nice email. There used to be a diner in Miami Shores on 2nd Avenue. My family walked there Sunday mornings. After two visits, they would see us coming and meet us at the table with hot cocoa for the kids. I miss that place and that kind of service. I suppose whenever you can do just a little bit something special for someone, it really multiplies in effect.
It's the highest level. It's becoming a customer advocate, Joseph. I mean, when you really do advocate for the customer and you know that this person's walking up with two young kids and you've seen them before, that really is going above and beyond. And really, what did it take? It took a little extra effort, but that person's a 20-year customer of yours after that.
Right. Yeah. Next up, Mari, and also recommending others, of course. Mari, Coral Gables, you're up. Hi.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I've been enjoying your program on customer service, and I just wanted to briefly share my experience.
Okay, I'm short on time. Can you get this in about a minute or so?
Yes, of course. In January, I was shopping for a pre-certified car here in Miami. I had gone and visit one dealer, local Coral Gables dealer, saw a car that I liked. Of course, had to investigate a little bit more. I saw another car at another dealer that had 4,000 miles more, $900 more. Yet the customer service, they sent me to three different salesmen in the short time that I was there. So needless to say, I went back, paid more money, and it was just because of the customer service that I received.
Very good.
Well, you know, you're reinforcing the fact that when you exceed expectations of a customer and you're really loyal to that brand, when you increase price, as a study, so when price increases, you're less affected by that because you really are loyal to the company. And I think Disney World's a good example of that. You think about their ticket prices keep going up, but I don't think their population is going down. So people love the experience. So.
Right. It's also reminding us, too, that, you know, it's unfortunate that you had that experience. And I think a lot of us have it. The baseline for customer service might be increasing, but still there's way more people out there that won't follow up than there are that will exceed our expectations. So if we take total ownership of doing that, we can make a big impact.
Well, another emailer. This is Marie. She says, I admire Dale Carney's South Florida trainings. I've been through classes with the amazing Robert Kelly trainer.
Woo-hoo.
And she wants to know if she can get a recorded copy of today's interview. Well, of course she can. Thank you very much, the owner and CEO of Dale Carnegie Training for Southeast Florida, Scott Jarvis, and also the vice president of Dale Carnegie Training, Southeast Florida, Christine Pallinson. Thank you very much. Very interesting hour.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks,
Joseph.
Appreciate it.
Please take a survey about today's program. Please press 1. Well, thank you for tuning in this hour. Our program was produced by Polly Landis. Technical direction from online producer Jason Zepka. Richard Ives is lead producer. Of course, we have free audio archives of each program at the radio link at our website. That's WLRN.org. More information at the Topical Currents Facebook page, as well as the iTunes podcast. Tomorrow at 1, it's live coverage of the Miami-Dade School Board meeting. Bonnie and I return Thursday with our monthly feature featuring Doreen Christensen of the Sun Sentinel and Linda Gassenheimer. Here and Now is next from NPR News.